Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing. Share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances. But most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdrastuytse. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Sawubona. In Senegal, Nangadef. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
And press 1 when you're ready to add your comments to the conversation, and we'll be right back after this quick break. So stick and stay. Don't stray away. And if you're listening online and want to join us live on Facebook, just go to Facebook and go to the Female Solution, or go to YouTube and go to the Female Solution and join us live, and you can write in your comments right there. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
The Female Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, Self-Care with Jody Susan. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Well-Being with Beata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, Success Strategies with Jana. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution.
Of nonviolence and learning how to speak to each other in a way that keeps the peace. There is a such thing as nonviolent communication, and we'll talk about that today. It's a way of relating to people that is empathetic. It's a way to make sure that you understand them, and they understand you. So our host is joining us live from London, Jana, who is a practitioner of nonviolent communication. And this is definitely one of the success strategies that we should learn, because when we can speak to others, even those who disagree with us, we don't have to be disagreeable, and we can actually make friends. This is a skill. And it's something we can teach our children. And, of course, Jana will be one of those featured on our upcoming Parenting with Peace course, teaching us some ways to help our children learn the skill of nonviolent communication, how to deflect everything from bullying and teasing to any type of injustice that they may encounter, even in the face of adults, and to be able to communicate in a way that is clear and understood. It doesn't have to be confrontational just because you disagree. But you also can be confident and stand your ground when you wish to make yourself understood. It is a skill, and it requires one to listen as well as speak. So what is the purpose of nonviolent communication? Well, we're going to certainly learn about that. We're going to talk to Dr. Myers, Dr. Stephanie Myers from Black Women for a Positive Change, and she is one who has been working with the process of creating positive change in our communities by helping our youth to understand how to communicate with each other. We want you to call us 515-605-9325 and press 1 when you're ready to speak. This has been a very intense time in the States simply because it is election time. And people are very intense about their political views, almost in some places ready to come to blows if they disagree. Just because somebody belongs or supports a particular political party doesn't mean they're bad or wrong or ignorant. And we've gotten used to the idea of attacking people who philosophically disagree. This definitely is not a way to handle differences. We have many hot-button issues in this election, everything from abortion to gun control. And people who are on the opposite sides of the fence tend to see each other as enemies and tend to engage in a lot of name-calling. We've even heard that kind of name-calling among those who are running for office and really should know better, but are engaging in the kinds of behavior that is very destructive. So how can we teach our children better if we're not practicing better behavior ourselves? How can we be the example of how you should go about speaking to people when we ourselves are being very disrespectful, nasty, insulting, and even threatening? So we'll need to learn some basics of how to talk to people, how to discuss things without being disgusting, pardon me, how to listen, how to empathize, and in some cases, how to harmonize, because it really does not require anger to get one's point across, even if one vehemently disagrees with the other party. Yes, there are a lot of issues that are very emotional. Some issues are so volatile that people can barely stay in the same room and have a conversation about them. Something such as abortion or same-sex marriage or gun control. People feel threatened if they believe that someone else's point of view is going to infringe on their rights, their safety, their security. And so we have to learn how to communicate with each other. And we have to learn the skill of nonviolent communication. So in this month of nonviolence, we're going to take a look at that first step in maintaining the peace, which is our power of speech. So here we have our Saturday host for the first Saturday of November, joining us live from London, our dear sister of the microphone. And let us bring on our host, Jana. Let me find. Yes.
That was a lovely intro. Thank you. So just tell me, what time is it now there?
It is 12:16. Yeah, we're going through some issues with time because daylight savings time ends tomorrow, which means we put our clocks back tomorrow. And I think it was last week we put our clocks back, right, in the UK?
We put it back last Saturday night, yeah. So we're on British, what do they call it now? GMT. I think they call it something else besides GMT, but it's Greenwich Mean Time. So we've been on British summertime all summer, and I've been really enjoying it. And we had a really hot summer this summer. I mean, it was so hot, even I was complaining. But I have a rule never to complain when it's hot, because I always complain when it's cold. But this summer and last summer, I was complaining because that's how hot it was, and we had another drought. We're in Ireland, so we should not be short of water, but we were. It was beautiful, beautiful, beautiful summer, and now we're headed into winter, which I don't like quite as much.
I'm definitely
And how are things in Chicago?
Well, it's kind of a warm day today, based on the month of November. I think it's like in the high 60s, so it's almost 70 degrees.
That's very similar to London now.
Yeah, so we had a couple of warm days. I think it's not supposed to get colder again until next week. I am not one for the snow. I mean, I tolerate it because, you know, it's part of the seasonal change. I'm really a tropical. I'm ready to head south or go to the equator or somewhere.
You need to put me in your suitcase when you go, right? Because I need to head south.
Yeah, when I go to Hawaii, I get a pair of suitcase and scoop you on up.
Yeah, well, that's what we need. That's certainly what I need. But, it's been quite a warm autumn. So I still haven't put on my winter coat yet, touch wood. I might have to put it on tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I've just been out, and it was still, you know, for November, it's really warm. So I really can't complain, and I'm not complaining. I'm very happy. Okay, we've got a guest coming on, but I think I messed up the timings. As you know, I've been a bit time challenged today, or tech challenged, whatever you want to call it. So my guest is going to be Dr. Stephanie. I just call her Dr. Stephanie, but her true name is Dr. Stephanie Myers. And she is one of the founders of Black Women for Positive Change, which means she is one of the architects of the month of nonviolence. So it's the week of nonviolence, and then since last year is now the month of the nonviolence. So she's got people organizing all over the United States, right? And it's not just for black women. It's a black women-led project, but anybody can participate in the month of nonviolence. Anybody can hold an assembly, any kind of meeting, any kind of event that's to do with nonviolence as part of our calendar. And the Blogging Carnival for Nonviolence is part of the month of nonviolence. So again, the Blogging Carnival for Nonviolence is a black women-led initiative. Well, I lead the Blogging Carnival for Nonviolence. So that's a black women-led initiative, but it's open to everyone. Anyone can submit a blog post. Anyone can read our blog post. We had quite a few people coming onto the website in the last few days, so that's been nice to see. I don't think we've had so many up till now. And I'm giving
you what I'd like to do.
I want bloggers to come in and start talking about their personal experiences of violence and nonviolence, because that's what the Blogging Carnival is about. So next year, is going to be our 10th anniversary. So everybody who's listening now and everybody who listens on the recording, start preparing your blog so you can submit it in June. So are we going to say something?
Yes, I was going to say what I'd like to do for those who are watching us on Facebook. Is maybe I can bring up the blog. What is the website address for the Blogging Carnival?
Well, here's what I do. I just go to Google and type in the Blogging Carnival for Nonviolence.
Okay.
I'm just doing that myself now. Yeah, because you did a really, really beautiful blog post. A vlog post. And, yeah, I want as many people as possible to watch it because it was just really beautiful. Right. So if you see, I'm looking at Google and it says blogs for the 2022 Blogging Carnival for Nonviolence, which is us.
Okay, so now let me see. blognonviolenceweebly.com. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. It's dot weebly.com.
Okay. All right. So blognonviolence.weebly.com.
Yeah.
All right.
And then if you go to the About page, you'll see links for the past few years. So there's a link for 2022.
Ah. Okay. Yeah, I see. Oh, yes. So now if I go to blognonviolenceweebly.com/2022, will that...
Yeah, that will take you to the right page. Yeah.
And that will get me to the blogs for this page?
Those are the blogs for this year. But what I did as well is I posted a couple links to blogs from previous years because we have had some really powerful, really hard-hitting blogs. And there's one by a lady called Gloria Clark. And the one she did this year, she called Darian's Story. And Darian was her son, who was killed when he was very young. And so she's been living with, you know, having lost her son for many, many years. And her son left a little girl who's grown now. So that's how many years she's been living with her grief. And she's still living with her grief. And last year, she wrote a very powerful poem, which was which we included in the Blogging Carnival for 2021. So if you look at the 2022 page, under Darian's Story, you will also see the link for her poem, When Will the Killing End?
And how old was her son?
Well, I think he was about 18. I can't say for definite, but I think he was around 18. He was very young, but he'd already produced a little girl, and so his daughter was a baby when she lost her dad. And she's a grown-up now. She's an adult now.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So that's how long Gloria's been living with her grief. And it's heartbreaking. It's really heartbreaking. As I say on the blog, I cannot begin to imagine what it's like to lose a child through violence. But, you know, she had to process it and process it and process it, and she's done that. And I think her words can help others as well. I think, you know, anybody who's going through this, any parent who's going through this, who's lost a child at a young age, you know, I mean, I can't imagine what that must be like. You'll never completely get over it. To lose someone so precious to you, you will never completely get over it. But,
especially,
you know, with support,
like,
with a lot of support and with time, you can start to heal it. And I think that her words are very healing because, you know, she's talking about being at the sharp end of grief, but she's also talking about getting through it and, you know, what she's learned from it. And hopefully what she says will help other people who are in a similar situation.
Well, I've pulled it up on the screen here for those who are watching us on Facebook. And if you're listening, you can listen. Or you can go to Facebook on or YouTube. I'm gonna type in the Female Solution. And you'll see the face of this beautiful woman, Gloria Clark, who lost a son. And I'll read a little bit of her poem here. It says, "Of following her real life tragedy, Gloria Clark's poem describes what happens in the aftermath of the killing of a child." And if you see my face all up on the screen, it's because I'm not wearing my glasses. Yeah. Okay. "Another night of violence, another young life ends, another family crying, another vigil to attend. Our sons are quickly dying, taken from us away too soon. Their bodies being littered under twilight of the moon. I hear a mother crying, sounds like thunder in my ears. Oh, how I wish I could comfort and wipe away her tears. Though her face I cannot see and her name remains unknown, I find the need to let her know that she is not alone. I feel a deep connection from the bottom of my soul. For the pain she feels, I also feel. My heart still bears the hole. Our families have been broken, our spirits even more, for we have lost our loved ones, the ones we so adore. Can we ever find that happy place where we used to be? Before young boys with guns and drugs attacked our city streets? Do the colors that he's wearing make you want to take his life? Or are you simply angry and cannot deal with family strife? Do you have a burning desire to feel the love our loved ones knew? Where are your family values? Guess that's missing in your life too. And the gang you're in, is the gang you're in your haven? Does it take away your pain? Does it make you feel significant? Is it your personal domain? What can be done to end this war? When will the killing end? We're in a quandary. What can we do? All rational thoughts transcend. It's time to stop the violence. The shootings have to cease. We have to learn to love one another and try to live in peace. Young men out there who find a need for a weapon to conceal, before you pull that trigger, remember that body may never heal. Life is a precious gift given from the Lord above. He gave us life to show us of his unfailing, undying love. He died for us upon the cross and gave his only son, that we will have the tree of life. He died and said, it's done. So stop the drugs and the killing and put the guns away. Be smart, learn to walk away to live another day." And she ends with the quote, "This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it," from Psalms 118:23-25. And she said, "My youngest son was shot and killed in 2000, which prompted me to write a short story of the struggles I faced in trying to deal with his untimely death. The title of my short book is entitled When Half of Your Heart Dies. I am a retired bookkeeper from Buffalo, New York, and I lived in a happy, fruitful life, being the mother of two sons and the grandmother of two granddaughters until the summer of 2000 when my youngest son, Darian, was shot and killed as he and his friends were leaving a school in our city. This is when my entire life changed, and it will never be the same again." So that's her story, and you've got the links for more from the Blogging Carnival for Nonviolence. Such a painful thing. And like you say, Jana, I can't imagine losing a child to violence. I think I would most certainly be devastated. And like she said, you know, you wonder what is in the heart and soul of another person who feels the need to kill. And you know that what's missing in their life is love. They didn't have the sense of
somewhere,
belonging,
somewhere in their
love,
life. Yes,
nursing
love, yeah.
You know, it's a very sad thing. It's heartbreaking, and
it really is. And somewhere in their life, they're missing some kind of guidance. You know, on a lot of these situations, there's no dad in the house. There's no father figure. And that's one of the reasons why people end up in gangs, because they feel like the gang is their family. The gang is going to look after them.
That's what it is. I try to look at the root of the problem, and the root of it is one's love of one's own self. So if you're in a relationship, you're in an intimate relationship with someone, and there is no love of self, then there is no love of you. And when you have two people together and both of them are not in harmony with why they're together, and then some soul comes through them coming to this earth that one or both of them didn't intend to have, then they're going to make that child feel unwanted and unloved, and
probably
nothing
so,
more grow up feeling like you were a mistake.
I know what that's like, because I grew up feeling like I was a mistake, because my parents, after my sister was born, were not able to conceive again for many years. So I was a surprise.
Ah.
And I grew up feeling unwanted. But fortunately, and my dad loved me. I know he did. But he didn't protect me when he should have done. But I had an older sister who also was a role model for me. And she used to look after me when I was a little girl. And so I still got that. And I used to always, when I was a young person, be really, really glad that I had a sister who was so much older than me, because my mom was not a great role model. Some of the things
she
did were very positive, but most of them really weren't. And this, I mean, it's because of her that I know a little bit about Black history. And I find once you know a little bit, then you can build on that. You can build on that. So I always had a sense of myself being descended from survivors. And I've always been really, really proud of my ancestors because they were survivors.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the Black community, we have this problem. And I'm not trying to say it's only in the Black community. I'm not saying that at all. But I do think it's very prevalent in the Black community where we have children growing up without fathers. They've never known their fathers, and I think that goes back to slavery. Those kind of family patterns go back to slavery.
Yes.
So, you know, we have a lot of healing to do. We need to heal ourselves, and we need to heal our families.
That's the biggest challenge, because you have so many people that grew up without families that were healthy. So they don't know what that looks like.
That's right.
To have a healthy family and an intact family and good relationships between mothers and fathers.
That's right. And good relationships between the parents and the children. You know, a lot of us just do not grow up with that kind of model, and I certainly did not grow up with that kind of model. So I have to heal that, and that's a long, drawn-out process, but I am healing it. And because I'm a healer, and I really, really want to be able to help other people.
So how do you heal? How does one heal the hurt that comes from maybe the lack of nurturing from a mother who maybe emotionally was not ready to parent a child in the loving manner that needed? You know, how do you go about forgiving that? Because that's a deep wound that a lot of us have, because a lot of our mothers were wounded themselves, a lot of them.
That's right.
Angry, hurt, disappointed, deceived, bitter, and they took it out on their children.
That's right. They do. And that's very sad. I understand it, but that doesn't make it okay just because I understand it. I understand where it may be coming from. But we all have our own healing journey, okay? So with me, you know, we had a meeting last week, and I was talking about SRT. SRT is spiritual response therapy, and it's a way of working with the higher self. You know, you're always talking about the higher mind and higher learning. We also could use the term higher self. So the higher self or higher mind is a part of us. It's on a higher vibration, on a higher level than we are. So it can look down and see us like as if you were standing on a mountaintop and looking down at your life. It has much better perspective. And I've done a lot of healing with SRT, but we kind of hit a roadblock eventually. And I had a brilliant, brilliant SRT practitioner who sadly is no longer with us. He passed away a couple of years ago, but he was still helping us. He was still helping us to do SRT. So that's one message I am aware of. But I'm always learning. I'm always learning more. Then I'm also Reiki Master and Seiken Master, so you can use that as well for healing the past. I know lots of different energy healing methods, and I'm still wanting to learn more. So at the moment, I'm exploring the silver mind control method, and you can do amazing things with that. You can heal yourself bodily. You can heal other people bodily, and I'm very, very keen to do that. But one of the things I found the most healing in my particular experience was NVC, nonviolent communication. When I was doing a lot of NVC, I just changed as a person. I changed as a person because all my life I've had this voice inside of me, which I wasn't even aware of, and it's probably still inside of me. But it was saying, you did that wrong, you didn't do that right, you should have done this, you should not have done that. And it's a very, very harsh voice, and I know exactly where it's coming from. You know, that's basically the way it communicates is the way my mother communicates. But what happens if we get given the same messages day in, day out, week in, week out, month in, month out, year in, year out, we have the same messages reinforced over and over again. We internalize them, which means that if you're living with an abuser, you start abusing yourself on a level, right? I was living with a lot of verbal abuse, and I started verbally abusing myself. The problem being it's unconscious, so I'm not aware that I'm doing it. But when I was doing a lot of NVC, I became very aware of this negative voice. And I always say, I think that's a good thing. When we become aware of something, even though it's extremely painful, I always think it's a good thing. So NVC is very, very healing. Right? If you keep practicing it, it can be extremely healing. And we talk about NVC in terms of conflict resolution. And yes, it can definitely be used in conflict resolution. But what I found personally was that when I was doing a lot of NVC, it really affected my self-esteem. And some of my self-esteem issues just disappeared and disintegrated in the face of love, because that's what NVC really is. It's love. It's love from the heart. It's not a judgmental love. It's not a love that's conditional. You know, it's basically putting us on the path of unconditional love. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Unconditional love is something
that... always think
that
NVC is about conflict resolution. And they're not wrong. They're not wrong, but it's about so much more than that. Because when you can really connect with your own feelings and needs, which is what we call empathy in NVC, right? Connecting with feelings and needs. When you can connect with that, then you can connect with other people's feelings and needs. And then the whole dialogue changes. The whole communication changes. There are people who could be at each other's throats, literally. But if you can get them to sit down in a room and talk to each other and connect with their own feelings and needs, which, as I said, is what we call empathy in NVC, once you really connect with your own feelings and needs, then you can start to connect with someone else's. And, you know, I was carrying, well, I've been told not to call it carrying because that's passive, but I was processing a lot of very, very intense anger. And certain things will still trigger me, you know, because I'm human. I can still get triggered. But a lot of that, when I used NVC, a lot of the anger just went. And under anger, we always say, is pain, fear, and unmet needs. So if I can really connect with the pain, fear, and unmet needs I'm experiencing, then I find the anger just goes. Now, can you imagine if we were doing that all over the world and people were able to let go of the anger?
Yes. But I guess
what
has to happen.
Be living in?
Well, I think what has to happen is that people have to be willing to listen to other people and empathize,
that's right.
Because that's the
that's
thing.
Right.
Everybody wants to be heard, but they get stuck when it comes to listening to other people's side, especially, and I think we've been saying this for the last couple of weeks, we need some type of truth and reconciliation council or something in most of these nations, because everybody has experienced abuse. And I know when it comes to the descendants of Europe and the descendants of Africa, we have this sore spot.
Very, very big, enormous sore spot. Yeah, we do.
And there's a lot of
a wound. I wouldn't call it a sore spot. We have very, very deep wounds that are historical.
Yes, and I kind of understand. You know, I understand White's point of view when they resist the teaching of what they've called critical race theory.
Can you explain to me, please, because I don't understand it. Why are they resisting? Is it out of guilt? Or is it out of
guilt? Well, the idea is
that
we're rehashing all the bad things that happened,
mm-hmm.
but these are not the people who did those things.
Well,
so
that's
it's
true.
Kind of
that's
like
true.
It's kind of like if, say, what kind of car do you drive?
Me, personally?
Yes.
If I'm going to go somewhere, I will jump on the bus.
Okay. Well, that's convenient. But say, okay, I drive a white Honda, 2014.
Okay.
So let's say somebody who drives a white Honda 2014 car plowed into a group of children crossing the street one day and killed
mm-hmm.
several
mm-hmm.
of them. And so let's say the police went to everybody's house who drove a 2014 white Honda Civic car and said, well, look, somebody killed these children, and, you know, they weren't the ones that had your same license plate, but, you know, they drove your same kind of car. So you're going to need to pay for this damage that was done. And I'd be saying, well, no, but it wasn't me that did it. Just because I'm in the same kind of car, it wasn't me. And
that's
so
right.
And they're still saying, but no, but you're driving that kind of car, and so you need to pay for this. And I'd be saying, oh, that's wrong. And so every time I said that's wrong, they say, you awful person. Don't you realize little Sally, just 5 years old, she was totally decapitated. Don't you see how horrible it was? And you don't care? And I'm saying, yeah, that's awful. It happened, but I didn't do it. And they're saying, well, listen how you sound. You don't have
definitely
sensitivity.
What you're getting
little Bobby, he'll be damaged for life in a wheelchair.
Well,
you don't care.
These things are still continuing. They're not continuing in the same form. But Europeans are still benefiting from what their ancestors did. And we, to a certain extent, are benefiting as well. Because, like, for example, you know there's places in Africa where you can't even get clean water to drink. And you can't even get clean water to give your children. Right? And every time I turn on my tap, clean water comes out, as far as I'm aware. I've been told recently that's not the case. But it certainly looks and smells clean. So I'm benefiting as well. I'm benefiting from colonization and from slavery to a certain extent. Europeans are benefiting so much more. It's so much easier to get a job if you're a young person, if you've got good qualifications, if you are white. And these patterns keep continuing. If you walk into Starbucks and a white person walks into Starbucks and you want a cup of coffee and they want a cup of coffee, and Starbucks will not serve you because of their racism, they will serve the white person, and you know that's happened. You know that that has happened. Some of it's been reported, but I'm sure not all of it's been reported. And I'm just using that as a tiny, tiny example. Okay, yes, I agree, you know, white people are not responsible for what happened in the past, but they're responsible for what's happening now and their own thought processes. You know, they still need to clean up their thought processes, like we need to clean up ours.
Well, you know, the thing about it, like you say, we're all benefiting in one sense from colonialism. If we're benefiting from the exploitation of any workers that are producing anything that we're using, then we're benefiting.
But
we're not the Europeans that created the system, just like these are not the white people that created the system. Now, there are some who might be still kind of mean-spirited, but they're not guilty just because they're white. You know, each person can
No, I'm not saying that, but I am saying that they're benefiting from it.
And every white person is not guilty of racism just by virtue of being poor
Well, I don't see us being guilty, but as far as I'm concerned, my belief is that all white people are racist, not meaning that they want to go out and lynch people or anything horrible like that. It's not that kind of extreme racism. It's subtle racism. Like I said, when you walk into Starbucks and someone doesn't want to serve you. And this was happening in the teens, you know. I mean, like within the past 5 years, it's happened. And like I said, we don't know about, I mean, I'm using that as an example. There's so many things. Did you know that Donald Trump, you probably heard this, Donald Trump, when he was building some kind of housing development in New York, when black people would come along and say, I want to buy a house, they would tell them, no, there's no more houses left. There's no more houses left for you to buy. And then when a white person would come along, oh, yes, we've got these houses you can look at and you can buy one. And when he got caught, what did he say? Well, you wouldn't have wanted to live next door to them either. You see, so I don't think it's as simple as saying, you know, they weren't doing the slavery thing. You know what happened in the Caribbean? I'm aware I've got a caller. I'm going to let my caller out in a moment as well. But do you know what happened when Britain outlawed slavery and the slave trade in 1837? You know what they did? They compensated the landowners, right? They compensated the slavers. They didn't give a penny of compensation to the formerly enslaved. And so you have dynasties now. A couple hundred years later, you've got dynasties which are still very, very wealthy from the money they made from slavery plus the compensation that the government gave them. So they can use that power. They've got this economic power, and they can use it to their own advantage and to our disadvantage. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yes.
It's not as simple. Of course, you're right. They're not the same people. No, they're not. But I think it's a lot more complicated than that, personally.
And that's the thing. If everybody is only responsible for their own behavior, then it isn't fair to penalize people who look like the people, you know, have a mild similarity physically to the people who did the wrongdoing, as if they're guilty just because they look like them, any more than it's right to blame someone who drives the same kind of car as the car who killed somebody. You know,
but I do think it's more complicated than
held
that.
For something
that's
they
my
didn't.
Opinion.
And I think that's where a lot of whites may feel that they don't want their children being made to feel like they're guilty by virtue of being white, you know, and the children have done nothing. They're just, you know, passive observers of history like everybody else. So I think there's a different way we have to teach what happened without making it seem like we're castigating an entire race of people and making them guilty by association.
I think you definitely got a point, and the thing is as well is that racism is irrational. So we will have these feelings. We will have these feelings of resentment or something. And it's irrational. It's not rational, but we have them. I'm just going to bring in my caller and see who we've got on the line. Let's see who's on the line. Welcome. This is the Success Strategy Show with Jana. Welcome to the show. Hi, can you hear me?
How you doing?
Hi, good evening, good afternoon, good morning. I don't know what time it is where you are, but I know what time it is where I am. So.
Yeah, but I always wanted to comment on surgery. You remember Jennifer Hudson?
Yes.
Remember when she had the problem when somebody was killing members of the family? The mother, not the mother, but some brothers or something like that. They had these events was going on in the family where it seemed like somebody was targeting family members.
Really?
Yes. Personal attack on her family. Yes.
Guess who put their family up for protection and provided security for them?
Who did that?
Donald Trump.
Oh, really?
Donald Trump, seriously.
Yes. It was a story about three black businessmen that had a great idea. and they needed funds. They couldn't get it from the bank, so they went to Donald Trump to borrow money. He lent it to them, and once they became successful, they came back to repay him, and he said, that's okay, keep it.
Really?
You never heard about that, have you?
No, never.
Well, then, see, that's what the Department of Homeland Security and intelligence agencies are trying to get legislation that would allow for them to punish people that put out misinformation or, like critical race theory, don't put out all the information. Because I can tell you what, you can bring up a critical race theory topic on any person, at any event, and I can give you what you are not including or that's not being included. And
yeah,
you know another
thing,
this
is what I think, is that there's always more to learn. There's always more to learn.
There's
so
two sides to the coin.
With critical race theory is trying to square the circle, trying to say, well, this is information that has been left out. Let's bring it in. It doesn't mean that to say there's not more information which has also been left out. But,
well,
you know,
it's the same thing.
Always learning. We're always learning.
Yeah, you're
about
right. You got information that's being left out and what one would consider the positive and the other consider the negative, but there's also information that's being out that the one that considered it negative, that can also be included as being positive.
Mm-hmm.
And one
can
other thing, too.
Example?
Let's talk about the liability. There's getting ready to come a time now, if we say that artists, hip-hop artists, and so if they are producers,
mm-hmm.
well, then they had better start carrying liability insurance just like an automobile producer does, in case their product caused harm or death. Because
right.
people are listening to these lyrics. They're
no,
listening
I
to these
you,
lyrics.
But, sorry, brother, I just want to say this, right? I am not a hip-hop fan. I know very little about
it,
okay?
Well, I'm not saying. I'm just using it as an example. I could
sure,
use the
sure,
example
sure,
of a fisherman
no,
or a
I mean,
cookie
I know
book.
Some of the lyrics. They have what's called drill music or something. And people listen to that over and over again. The message, it's like any message. If you hear it over and over and over again, it starts to go into your brain. And then it becomes
no,
part of who you are. You internalize it. So it's not healthy to keep listening to this music, but I think we need to ask, why do these children feel it necessary to listen to this kind of music? Because I've never listened to drill music in my life, and I'm really
well,
horrified.
Well, but you don't. But you
There's
don't. But many
thing
people.
Is drill music. I am horrified.
Yeah, you don't. You know, this thing with you being in London, we here in the United States, there is a delay. But you may not listen to it, but many do, especially young people. Then they go out and reenact what it is that they have heard of being basically programmed, and they call injury and harm. So somebody's going
to
have to
do that. I understand that, but what I don't understand is why are they listening to it? Why? What are they getting out of it? Because from my understanding, this is very, very negative and even violent lyrics.
They listen to it because they have a right to it. The same thing with going to church every Sunday. And the preacher is talking about the by and by. Is there a by and by? So should that preacher be held accountable for indoctrinating and aspiring people to prepare for the by and by? And lead present day where we are things just to run a raid?
Uh-huh. So you ask me my opinion, or you just ask me a hypothetical question?
Yes, it is. That's the other side. That is
so
the other
is
side that's not talked about.
You ask me a hypothetical question.
Well, they all hypothetical.
No,
they all
I'm just wondering.
You know, you talk about
in the civil rights era, there were preachers who were still telling people in the by and by, wait to get up to heaven, you get the your reward in heaven. And there were people who were still wedded to that mentality, but there were other preachers who were inspiring people, saying, "No, stand up. You deserve to get what you need. You need to get what you deserve." Right, you don't need to wait till you're dead to get your reward. You should be having the reward now, like Bob Marley says. if you know what life is
worth.
Well,
that should be up. But you can agree that that's up to the individual themselves, because in the United States, the U.S. Constitution applies to individuals and not groups.
Mm-hmm.
When you die and you come up for judgment, you stand judgment for your sin, not
mm-hmm.
the sins of the group. So
that's
what you're looking at. It's up,
mm.
If that individual wants to go to church every Sunday, that's their ability to. It's the same thing with critical race theory. If parents don't want their child to be influenced, exposed to that type of teaching, my child, my choice.
Well, yeah, but your children are being exposed to a lot of other teaching, which is very damaging. So that, therefore, I think there has to be something to counterbalance that. You know, when I was a child, I was taught in school there was something called manifest destiny. I wasn't taught that manifest destiny meant going out and murdering thousands of people. You know, I wasn't taught that manifest destiny was about bloodshed. And everybody who talks about manifest destiny has blood on their hands. And
how do you know that manifest destiny?
Their land was stolen
how
from
do
them,
you know?
And the people who did it lied. And, you know,
as
I'm concerned, it's just as damaging, if not more damaging, than something called critical race theory.
How do you know that?
How do I know what?
How do you know that manifest destiny caused those problems? Hang on for a second.
Because that's what people acted on, and I even said it. And you know when manifest destiny goes back to...
Well, wait a minute.
Time when
there,
Franklin
listen to what you're
alive.
Saying.
We're talking 1800.
Listen to what
people
you're saying.
Already talking
you
this nonsense.
You are going by what somebody told you. You
mm-hmm.
did not
well,
experience
yeah.
it from primary sources. That's basic. See, if you don't experience it from primary sources, then you have to go by what somebody say, which was
mm-hmm.
not your experience. It's what they tell you their experience was. Their
right.
Well,
right.
with
the
anything,
problem.
That's the same thing with the with slavery and everything else. But if you have people in your ancestry who passed down information, you might not
mm-hmm.
have personally experienced it. But if your ancestors did, that's a pretty reliable source if they're telling you what happened. This is like somebody telling you what happened in the war. You know, my father has a whole lot of war stories. He was there.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't,
mm-hmm.
but he was. So if I say this is what happened, the black soldiers in World War II were discriminated against and treated worse than the white German soldiers, I'm not just saying that. I have a firsthand account of someone who experienced
that's right.
it.
That's right. And not just the Second World
yeah,
War. Let me just put it.
But,
it didn't just happen in the Second World War.
It
happened in the First World War as well.
It can be a story that's talked about.
They brought people from the Caribbean. They didn't give them
yeah.
their winter uniforms. They sailed via the North Pole. These are people coming from a tropical country. And a lot of them developed frostbite and had to have amputations. And we know that because we've heard people who lived through that talk about it. So is that considered to be a primary source?
Well, let me
yeah.
tell you this. How long did the British work to try to end indigenous slavery in Africa? How long? And how much money did they spend?
Yeah, well, you want my
they
opinion.
Started, wait a minute, let me tell
you.
Let me tell you this. They started in 1808, and they was continuing to try to end it amongst the indigenous people who did not want to end it up into the 1920s.
Okay,
did you hear
that's
about
an
this story?
I don't necessarily agree with that, but it's an interesting perspective.
No, it's true,
the line,
because the people themselves,
the
wait a minute. You know,
hello,
here's
the
thing.
Welcome this caller, because this might be my guest. Hello?
You won't let your callers finish their statements and you break in and cut them off. That's really
no,
unjust.
I'm not letting you finish. I just want to see who else is on the line, because it might be my guest. Hello?
Yes,
welcome
hello. This is Stephanie Myers.
Hey, Stephanie. How you doing?
Just fine. You're
oh,
having quite
see,
a discussion
I mean, have you heard
there.
This conversation hey. You've been having about primary sources?
Yes,
yeah.
I'm listening to it. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
well,
great.
Stephanie,
have you got
see,
any
I need you to hold
it?
On. And Bianchi, I need you to hold on. We got to take a quick break, and
okay.
we'll come
okay.
back and continue this discussion. And if you're watching us on Facebook Live or YouTube, feel free to write in your comments. We'll share them with our listening and viewing audience. And Zelda Robinson says, Grand Rising, beautiful Korean teacher. Thank you so much, Zelda. Thank you for watching. Feel free to write in your comments as we talk about the month of nonviolence. And as you have heard, we've got a little spirited discussion here because things did happen. How do we teach about it? And how do we heal from the hurt so that we are not rehashing the violence and reliving it? How do we heal? So we'll be right back after this quick break, and we want you all to stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
Do you worry about finances, family, health, job, relationships? Are you in pain? Do you feel stuck? If you answered yes to any of these questions, help is available. Don't worry, you're not alone. It's part of the human process. You only feel this way because you haven't mastered the voices in your head. No hype, just down-to-earth, solid, workable tools and techniques that you can practice daily. It's really food for the soul. Whether you want to learn how not to worry about anything, reverse type 2 diabetes, publish a book, promote your product or service, or just make extra money. To take advantage of the deal of the day, go to ZeldaSpeaks.com or call 312-409-6619. Mention promo code The Female Solution and get free shipping. That's ZeldaSpeaks.com or 312-409-6619. Stop worrying today. Visit ZeldaSpeaks.com.
Now, higher than ever. Every day, thousands of our residents leave Chicago to shop in Indiana. Jobs are being lost, and businesses are relocating. Let's find a way to lower our taxes to encourage residents to continue living and shopping in our city. Let's rebuild. Let's restore Chicago. Vote for me, for mayor of the city of Chicago, and I will work hard to find solutions that matter. I'm Dr. Willa Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willa Wilson.
Kids are the future and should not be left behind. One person should not decide what is the best for our 77 communities. Politicians must work together for our kids' best interests. They deserve a safe education with resources that meet every student need. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for mayor.
Crime in Chicago continues to increase. Communities and politicians must come together to make a change. No one person can solve these problems by themselves, but I believe together we can make progress. Let's provide job training, economic growth, and invest into our 77 communities. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for mayor.
I want you to finish making your point, please. I did not mean to cut you off.
But as you know, there is a little bit of a delay, so, you know, it isn't intentional if one person starts speaking before the other one finishes and vice versa. So so we do understand there's a little time delay in our connection.
There is,
So please,
yeah,
no one take...
technology is basically having fun with me at the moment. But we will sort it out. We will get this sorted. Brother, can you finish making your point, please? Because I'd really like to hear what you have to say.
Well, you had a lady that called in. I was going to listen and see what she had to say.
Okay, well, Dr. Stephanie?
Yes, I'm on.
I'd love to hear about the month of nonviolence, which is just finished. And, you know, tell us about some of the activities and events that you've been holding.
Okay, I would certainly be glad to do that. But before that, I just want to comment on this discussion that you're having. Because
okay.
I think that facts and data are really critical. You know, we
okay.
have different ways people approach decision-making. Some people like to approach it from the gut and their instincts and what they believe is the accurate situation. Other
yeah.
people like to operate based on history, research, data, and facts. I
mm-hmm.
think that going forward into the future, we need to rely on history and facts in terms of our decision-making approach.
Okay.
Because if you just rely on instincts or your gut feeling, sometimes that can just be wrong. So you guys
yeah,
were talking
yeah.
about, you know, the reaction of white children to learning critical race theory or history of slavery. It's not so much that they're being blamed for anything. The important thing is that white children in America, England, and all over the world need to understand the history of what their
okay.
ancestors did. That's not
okay.
to point blame at anyone. It's just to say these are the facts.
Okay.
So I come down on the side of that.
Why don't they need to know that?
But you know, you also have to include what black people contribute to that happening, because if they had not contributed to it, then whites, quote unquote, white skin would not have been able to profit from it. Then also you have to include that black slaveholders existed too, and it was just not a few. That's where the problem comes in. You want to teach it to white kids and say this is what your ancestors did, but you don't want
mm-hmm.
to teach it to black kids and say this is what your ancestors contribute to what you call slavery.
It's
okay.
important to teach both stories. Black people were
yeah,
sold
very.
To the Portuguese by Africans in West Africa. There were African chiefs of tribes all through West Africa who collaborated with the Dutch
yes.
and the Portuguese
yes.
and the British and sold our people into slavery. That's
yes.
a very important story because we don't want it to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
There are black mm-hmm. people who are good and black people who are bad. There are Africans
like
who are good,
people,
and
right?
like every other race of people. So, yes, I agree with you, sir, that we must teach both sides of the story because
okay.
we in America are at a very critical point. England is at a critical point. France is at
yes.
a critical point. Africa. There is a great division globally that's going on right now among people. And some people are so greedy that they will sell in order to profit anyone in order to,
right.
to gain a buck. And so this
and
could be black
been the
or
case,
white.
Right? It's always
absolutely.
Been the case.
And you know, another thing, too, that was going on before they even met a white face also.
That's true.
But here's
that
the
is
point.
Very true.
Here's the thing. What the course of events that happened to in history that led to me being here in the United States at this point in time, I had nothing to do with it, but I'm happy to be here compared
okay.
to where I could have been if it had not happened.
Okay.
Well, okay, I wouldn't go as far as that. I think that the presence in America has had its benefits, but it also has had 400 years of pain and agony. So I find it difficult to say that I'm glad my ancestors went through that pain and agony so that I could be here.
Okay.
We don't want our future generations to have to experience poverty, homelessness, suffering, slavery, any of these things in order to survive. We have to build a new America. And
yeah.
Zana opened up talking
and a new
about
world. Yeah, we have to.
A
we
new,
have to.
A new absolute.
Yeah.
And,
but,
a, and a
but
new world.
But there's two sides to that. There's two sides to that. Because my grandson used to ask me, Papa, why don't you buy you some new shoes? My shoes had holes in them. Matter of fact, I put them on the internet and showed them to people. My toes were sticking out. And I told him, when you get out of college, I'll buy me some new shoes. So I had to suffer. I had to be neglected in order to make sure that he went to college and his education, no student loans, unperturbed. So people have to experience suffering in order for future generations to be able to come on the scene from a standpoint higher than what their previous ancestors was.
Yeah,
I don't think that's always the case.
Jonathan, can I open the mic for another
person to speak for it?
If I can be polite.
Dr. Becker,
I'd like to open another mic and add another conversation, if that's okay. Area code 310-902. Introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience, and perhaps you can give us your thoughts on this topic.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, that is true, but that is an old model, and it's not always true anymore. Dr. Edgar told his followers, you must make sacrifices so that your children can get an education. And they did.
Jonathan, you have a person that's
on the
line that's talking. Eric,
what you're saying, but I also think there's another story as well, because that is an old model. It doesn't really have to work that way today.
Sorry, we got a little bit of time delay from London, but Jana, your caller on area code 310, they were speaking. We can give them a moment to express a thought.
Okay.
Yes.
Please on the line, please. Welcome to the show.
This is a very serious situation and topic that I often think about myself. And I do believe that it is crucial to hear from both sides, to learn.
Mm-hmm.
From every angle, but at the same speed, I do understand the atrocities, the suffering, all of the injustices that have stemmed from slavery. And the best analogy that I've come across through my many years of life is like this. The situations that black folk are in now is basically like playing a game of Monopoly, where for the first 300, 400 years, you were only allowed to make it by passing go. You couldn't invest in the real estate. You couldn't be part of the community. You couldn't add resources. You couldn't have none of that. So you was lucky just to survive all of those years.
Right, right.
And then right after the 400th year, when you was finally allowed to play, you're so far behind because of the systemic problems.
I agree.
It is very systemic. It is rooted. It's almost like in order for this great country to exist the way it is, you have to have people of power, with people with money, and then you have to have people that are poor. And so that's the thing that has to change. We have to understand it's like a certain level of benevolence where you treat everyone as people. If everyone was treated as or your community member or your neighbor, none of these crimes could have happened in the first place.
Okay.
So that's
okay.
Just my standpoint on the matter.
So what do you say that if African people hadn't been
calling?
Selling each other in the first place, then slavery would never
Scott
have happened?
I'm calling
is that
from
what
California?
You're saying?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So that makes a lot of sense.
I share
that.
Hold on a second, Jonna. He was giving us his name because I wanted to put it on the screen here. Can you give me your name again, please?
Yes, my name is Scott James, and I'm calling from California.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Scott.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Is this Scott who's with Cal State Dominguez Hills?
Yes, it is. It's Dr. Myers.
Oh, yes, it is. Hello, Scott. Zana, this
Hello,
is one of
you?
The gentlemen who worked with the Month of Nonviolence. Thank you very much
calling
in.
Oh, I'm so glad you're joining us today.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Yes. Well, Zana, you opened up asking me to talk about the Month of Nonviolence, and I would like to do that if this is the right time, because this whole issue.
This is as good a time as any. Yeah, absolutely. I want to hear what you've got to say. I want to hear about what's happened this year, because this is the 11th year, is it not?
Yes, this is the 11th year. We started the year that Trayvon Martin was killed. And we have continued on, because the more and more that you learn about the violence and disparities are just, it's just hard to live with and to accept.
Mm-hmm.
So this was our 11th year. And we had activities. We had 17 activities around the country in 15 states. Yes, in 15 states, and California was one of those states. And the gentleman who just spoke, Scott James, was involved in putting on a Gen Z summit. And that was really one of our best events.
Is that the one that I came along to?
Yes, you did. You came online. You sure did. Yes.
But it was really late here, so I did not stay up for it. But I was glad I got to at least experience it a little bit. So I'm sorry, brother. Can you repeat your name, please? I'm not good.
Yeah,
I'm not good with
Scott.
Names myself.
My name is Scott James.
Okay, Mr. James. Tell us a bit about the event that you held. Did you say it was in California?
It was actually a virtual event, and
I was part
of the design team.
I didn't know
that
was there. But still, it's good to hear about it because I just think it's wonderful. This has been one of the positive things that have come out of that awful, awful pandemic, is that we can connect with each other in different ways now, ways that we weren't using before. So I'm so pleased when I get to actually attend some of these events. And so tell us, who actually was involved with the summit?
Yes, yes. That's a great question. So,
thank you.
Professor Valerie, who's a professor at CSUDH, she assembled a design team of some students and former students from our negotiations, conflict resolution, and peace building program. And
okay,
so we
can
all
you tell
got together.
What those initials stand for, please?
Yes, nonviolent crisis. It's NCRP, and it stands for nonviolent conflict resolution and peace building.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically,
it really warms my heart that there's people like you doing this work. It really does.
I appreciate it. Yes, we need more positive men, more positive black men. So I'm very, very glad I got a chance to dive deep into this type of field work.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, this program teaches us all the skills, not only to be facilitators, mediators, but, you know, positive forces in society. We're really dedicated into whatever field we're in. We're trying to make a better difference for the community. And so basically it was like 6 or 7 team members, and we all had our roles. I actually had the beautiful opportunity to help Dr. Myers for 2 of her summits. The first year I was the lead designer.
Lovely.
Mm-hmm. The first year
so
I was the lead
how did
designer.
You choose the people who attended the summit, or did they choose themselves?
That's a good question. Professor Rowry actually chose the crew, and based on what she thought we were good at, she designated our roles. And
that's
then once our
choose,
team was
yeah.
put together, we reached out to volunteers. And we all had our team of volunteers. Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a good program.
Excellent.
It was excellent.
Excellent.
And the comments of the Gen Z, the young people, were excellent. They talked about voting. They talked about violence. They talked about the ways that their parents raised them that led them to feeling insecure and scared. They talked about domestic violence. It was a very powerful session, very powerful.
Mm.
Can I ask?
I remember there was a young woman who was talking about her experiences, and that she'd been through some very tough times. And I found it really inspiring that she was willing to actually come out and speak about her experiences.
Yeah,
I'd
there
like
was
to
a
ask
lot
this,
of honesty.
I don't know if maybe this is something that Scott can answer or any of you, but I'm interested in knowing what some of the young people said they experienced with their parents raising them that made them feel insecure and they felt were problematic. What were some of the things that young people said? Maybe, Scott, can you share a few of those things that you recall
being said? Great question, Naima. Great question.
Absolutely. From my perspective and from my insight of what many of the youth, the main theme was the lack of being connected with older generations, and the lack of not being heard.
Mm-hmm.
So those two components together created some type of disconnect
right.
with the millennials, the older generations, and the Gen Z. So Dr. Myers, this is why it was great, because she provided that space for us to have a dialogue, for us to design a dialogue that did just that. It allowed the youth to have a chance to be heard, but it didn't stop there. So we listened to the youth, and then we tried to put together processes and systems that maybe can assess their needs. And that's what I think was missing all this time, a connection with some type.
So one of the things that you heard, were you surprised that what were some of the things you were surprised that you heard them say once they got a chance to say it?
Well, I'd like to respond to that also, because the young people talked about how their parents would tell them to be quiet, to shut up, to sit down, to be seen but not heard, that they would be beaten and whipped on occasion, that they often felt that their opinions were not valued in the household, and that the parents were very very restrictive in terms of letting them express themselves. So one young lady in particular from Alabama, she talked about developing just a real mental illness because her parents were so hard on her, and she didn't feel that they believed in her or that they admired her intelligence. And so that was the thing I found to be very troubling about what some of the young people were saying.
And so where do these kind of parental behaviors, where do they originate from or where do they stem from? Did you talk about that or?
Well, Naima, you know
yourself is that you have today in some society, especially in the society that you deal with most, is that that disconnect of family. What the gentleman was describing is something that if it was a child was in a functional family where they seen the interaction between a mother and a father, in a functional family where you have legitimate grandparents, not 35-year-old grandparents, but grandparents who have matured, whereas they can offer intergenerational assets to the family, period. So when you lack that, then the outcome can be just about anything, almost like a flip of the coin.
Well, that's true. But, you know,
grandparent at 35, that's not necessarily not being legitimate, is it? Because that happens. That does happen.
Yeah.
I don't think it's ideal, but it does happen.
It happens, but I'd like to take a look at what was said about hitting, because we've had conversations about this corporal punishment issue, and it is it's old-time practice. And I'm not saying that African people didn't beat their children, but I do know that the severity of our corporal punishment, it comes out of a slave culture, and it is damaging, and it is that old school way of treating children that needs to change. And so now we have young people who are able to say, this damaged me. And I admire that because it damaged us too, and it damaged our parents, and it damaged their parents.
That's right.
So now
that's
somebody
right. It's an intergenerational thing. And it will keep repeating itself until we hear it. That's why some of our families are so damaged. And we need to remember, as I was reminded when I was on that forum, that it doesn't just happen in black families. You know, I mean, I do completely agree with what you just said, Naima, that in our case, it started with slavery, and that's where it originated from. That's why we still have these toxic patterns in our families now, because of slavery. But it happens in other communities as well, as I'm sure you know. I mean, I have read terrible, terrible things about what happens in Asian families, you know, online.
Absolutely.
Horrible, horrible things. So it's not just us, but I do think we need to be cognizant of the fact that in our case, it originated from slavery. These toxic patterns of behavior originated from slavery.
And this is
what I think about that. Do you agree? Do you disagree?
Yes, absolutely. But it's not just slavery, Zana. It was indentured servitude of whites.
Yes.
When you look at England in particular, back in the 1400s and the 1500s, people don't realize that the first people sent over here before black people were children from England who were homeless out of the streets of England. They were sent to Virginia to be indentured slaves. And white people were sent over to America and into the islands and South America just like black people were, only the best that the white people could look forward to was after 7 years they would be free. And in many cases,
see,
they got land.
That is a big difference, the fact that they could be free.
Yes, but the problem was when they became free, they made them wardens at prisons, police officers, slave catchers. So a lot of the poor whites from Scotland, Ireland, and England were brought over here to control black people who were in bondage. And so even today, you have white communities in America and in England that are still poor white communities. In America, they call them trailer trash. And those whites are also the victim of terrible domestic violence and family violence and incest. The incest in poor white communities is horrific. So when we talk about one of the goals for Black Women for Positive Change is we want to change the culture of violence in America and around
the
world.
The board, wherever
we want to change the culture.
We want to change that.
And in order to do that, we have to go back to the beginning and look at the parenting. Incest must stop. You know, the violence against children and families must stop. The anger.
I agree with you completely, but I've had big, big arguments with people for years, right, online and offline. People say to me, these are mostly black people, people's African heritage, say to me, we have to beat our children. We have to beat our children. And it's so indoctrinated. So what would you say to someone who said that to you?
I think the discipline is appropriate, okay? We have to discipline our children. That does not mean violent beating. There are different, and with the program that Scott is in out in conflict resolution, I've been so amazed to learn about these people. We have a secret profession that Scott is one of them, people in anger management and conflict resolution. They are learning how to handle difficult confrontational situations nonviolently. And we need to lift that profession up.
Let me ask Naima. Let me ask Naima another question. Naima, you remember the term for old and new. Am I right?
Yes.
Old and new means that when you did something wrong, you didn't immediately get punished for it. It may be 3 weeks after accumulation of doing things wrong, then you got that paddle. So what the problem is that discipline a child is a learned behavior that has to be passed down to the new mother and father. Right now, it gets back to the same thing. When you don't have the family, one of the first learning places for a child is amongst the family.
That's true. Family is dysfunctional, then the child is just dysfunctional behavior. So it's more than just having a mother and a father.
And the blaming
on
slavery.
I want to say this before we take a break, because we got to take our last break.
Yeah.
But we are launching an entire parenting class called Parenting with Peace to teach parents the skills of parenting without violence, without verbal abuse, using only love as a way to guide. Because if you are using any form of violence, you are teaching violence. I don't care what your excuse is. You're teaching violence. You cannot show love and hit and use pain because it causes damage. Parents don't know any better. That's why they're using those old methods that produce people who are damaged. So we are teaching a whole new method of parenting. And Jana will be part of that. Because, of course, she has the skills of nonviolent communication that need to be learned at an early age so that people know how to communicate with each other and parents know how to listen to their children. In the past, we've been taught that children have to be seen and not heard, and sometimes not even seen. So that the mindset of the parents has to change. We have to respect young people and give them the right of human respect and not treat them like they're our possessions that we can beat at because we don't have the skills to guide them with love. So this course is going to teach those skills, and it's called Parenting with Peace. It will be on our platform for our New Earth Homeschool Academy online, And we want parents to begin to transform their thinking. Those old school ways don't work. They didn't work with us. They didn't work with our parents. They might have produced fear, but they did not produce an emotionally healthy
adult. When you come back, I got something. I got a question to ask you on that, too. When you, because Naima, you know, in our in ventures, even me as a grown person, when I came amongst older people, I asked them, may I have permission to speak? Our kids got attention and asked, can I speak? Also, my grandparents, my grandfather only had to look at me. He didn't have to use no verbal abuse. He just looked at me, and I knew that I better consider what it is that I had done before I carried any further. So it wasn't no outright stuff like you see today.
Well, hold that thought. We'll be right back after this break, because you can teach that same level of respect, and you don't have to instill it with fear. You can still teach respect, but you've got to give respect, and that's what parents have not done. They have not respected the children because they don't know how. We'll be right back after this last break. And you're listening to and watching The Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. This is Success Strategies with Jana, who's joining us live from London, and our wonderful guests. Well, actually, we've got several who have shared information about the recent month of the ongoing month of nonviolence. But we'll hear more from Dr. Stephanie Myers, and we want you to stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be right back after this quick break, so stay with us.
Oh, man, God sent the monthly sun bill today. This sunlight is really expensive, especially during this season. I'll probably have to work overtime to pay it.
Well, you better pay it on time. We don't want the sun to go out, and we're sitting up here all day in the dark.
Wouldn't it be terrible if God charged us for sunlight? Well, thank God, the light and heat from the sun is free. So why are we paying such high bills for the energy we use in our homes? Because we don't know how to use solar energy, the free energy from the sun. You can convert your regular home to a solar energy home and save tremendously on your electric bill. Take a look at your electric bill. Wouldn't you like to reduce or possibly even eliminate that cost altogether? Let one of our solar consultants show you how. Call today, 312-849-3456, and schedule a free consultation. That's 312-849-3456.
Hey, it's time to take charge of your health. I'm Viata, your holistic life coach, and every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I'm here on The Female Solution to empower you to make choices that will assist your evolution to abundant health. I'm also blogging every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at Soul Purpose Healing, where I bring you a spiritual chiropractic adjustment to bring you back into alignment with our Creator's love, compassion, and wisdom. Join me every Friday morning at 8 a.m. and Sunday evening at 8 p.m. for a time of unity, enlightenment, and love vibration. Shalom.
Have you ever dreamed of going to exotic places, meeting fascinating people, enjoying uplifting music, and spending nights in a luxurious hotel? Do you look forward to a relaxing vacation where you can walk along the beach or sit in a quiet park and enjoy the sunset or sunrise? Whether you're flying around the world or driving across the country, we will share travel tips that will help you stay safe while you enjoy the journey. Join me every third Saturday of the month, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and move around with Deborah here on The Female Solution Show. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. and press 1 to speak.
Okay, so I've got a question for all the callers, especially Stephanie and my executive producer, Naima, which is, how would you respond to someone who says hitting a child is not violence? Because I've had this big argument with someone I met. He's around my local neighborhood. He works for one of the churches. And when I said to him something about violence, as in hitting children, he was so shocked. He looked at me like I was from another planet, and he's going, violence. That's a very strong word, so I said it's a very strong thing to do. But one of the concerns I have is that in our community, we see violence as not being a big thing. You know, oh, yeah, just hit the child, just hit the woman, just hit them. We have a very casual attitude, in my opinion, towards violence. So I'd like to know, what if someone said to you, hitting a child is not violence? What would be the response, bearing in mind this is actually happening to me? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that's very important because domestic violence plays into it. One of the workshops we had during the month of nonviolence was on domestic violence, and
mm-hmm.
this young woman said that she watched her mother being beaten while
mm-hmm.
she was young. And so when she became old enough to get married, she married a guy who beat her because she
mm-hmm.
thought that that was normal. And that
yes.
when she was only 6 years old, her older cousins started to abuse her when she was six. And she thought that that was normal. And I thought it was very interesting that some of the people in domestic violence discussions, they think that children should learn what domestic violence is because they're often raised in a household with it and they don't know what it is, so they
yeah,
take it for granted.
I completely agree. And then
so
I think the casual attitude, as I've said. It doesn't
the casual
only happen
attitude
in our communities, but what happens in our communities is what I'm most aware of. Right?
It happens
and
in all communities.
Casual attitude towards violence.
It's casual because
it happens in all communities because first of all, we don't see children as people the way we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so it takes a whole mindset to change. And that's
mm-hmm.
why we're doing this course, because people, they grow up being beaten. And often in their households, you have parents that fight or beat each other up. And it's not always the man
that's
on the
right.
woman. Sometimes the woman is violent. But when you have
yeah.
domestic violence, children learn that it's normal. And then there's
yeah,
the idea
right.
that you should be able to hit your child. And yet, the way you hit a child, if you hit an adult like that, what's it called? Assault. Well, it's still assault when you do it to a child. It doesn't make it any less assault.
Yes, yes.
Because
yes.
They're smaller
the thing is,
hit you back.
Well, if it happens
still
inside
assault.
The family,
yeah,
the
thing
it's an
is,
adult, then the law doesn't necessarily take it that seriously. It's not like you went out and hit a stranger. You know, she's your wife, so the attitude is often, well, it's okay. Even though it's now illegal to beat a wife, the attitude a lot of times is, well, you know, it's just a domestic.
And that's
parents
the
are responsible.
You
are responsible for
parents,
it.
It's considered okay to beat your wife. You're right. So when the culture has condoned violence, then people don't even realize they're being abused. And the
that's
effects
right.
of the abuse
that's
is
right.
just as severe, even if it's not called abuse, you're still traumatized. Just
that's
because
right. exactly.
most
the
populations
that trauma. Let me tell you something. Right? I went away to do my degree course, and because the world was so different from the way I saw, because I saw the world as being very distorted. Well, I didn't realize it was distorted, but it was my way of seeing the world because I grew up in a house where there was a lot of abuse. There was a lot of verbal abuse, there was some physical abuse, and there was a lot of gaslighting. So, oh, no, I didn't say that to you, that kind of attitude. And when I went away to college, I started going to the psychiatrist because I literally thought I was going crazy because the world was so different from what
Naima,
I thought it was. I literally thought I was going crazy.
And
I kept telling you, you're not going crazy, which was true, but that didn't actually help me, but it was the truth.
Naima, that gets back to the same issue. When my daughter dated, I'd done research, background checks on who she was going to be around. When she married, the same thing. And one thing that I told her potential husband is this. Don't do anything to my daughter that you would not want me to do to you. That is setting the stage. That is something that existed in black culture in the United States when I was coming up. It don't now because you have this disconnect. You got too many dysfunctional families, and the results is what you're complaining about.
Well, I think that's very important, Scott, what you just brought up, because 70% of our kids now are being raised in single-family households. Sometimes it's by mom, sometimes it's by dad in America, 70%. So one of the issues we have to address, and during the month of nonviolence, we had an excellent session on fatherlessness. You can go on Facebook to the 100 Fathers website, 100 Fathers, Inc., and they make it one, you know, digit, 100 Fathers, Inc., and they had an excellent discussion about the impact of fatherlessness, particularly on the young boys, but on the young girls as well. They don't have that role in their lives. So as you plan these parenting classes, please include the importance of either the biological father or a mentor who substitutes for the father, but the children need to have both parents in their lives or a mentor substituting for the parent, because this is something that you just can't fill in without those relationships.
Right. And it doesn't have to be a parent, but somebody in that role, an uncle or a friend of the family or somebody in that role who take on that protective role. So the child will be protected because girls need fathers too. It's not just the boys that need fathers. Girls who don't have fathers can make some very, very serious errors of judgment.
Let me ask Scott a question. Scott, what do you think is the main thing young men need to know in order to prepare them to be fathers?
That's
a good question. And I feel like the best preparation for our young men to be fathers is to have men in their lives to show them how to be a father. Because everything that you all talked about previously are all adverse childhood experiences. And when our youth experience what we call ACEs, these ACEs, it has lifelong effects. When you have no father in the household, or where it's one parent in the household struggling and the kids see that, when you see abuse, whether it's physical, emotional, you know, all of these things are adverse childhood experiences, loss in the family, when you don't have enough food, when you don't have proper shelter. And so these are the things that don't get talked about or don't get addressed in schools. So our youth come to school under these circumstances and are exposed to all kind of other precipitating factors that make their life that much harder, and we just consider them menaces to society or we consider them bad kids. So but when you add the component of not having a father, oh, man. I mean, who is showing our young men how to be men?
That's it. And they are not bad children. They are not bad children. They're children who have fallen into situations which are not healthy for them.
Right.
And they're just trying to understand how to get through, you know, how to be an adult, how to be a man or a woman, and how to get through their life.
Right.
And just the message that Scott, gave to the young man, if you mess with my daughter, I'm going to be after you. That protects a lot of young women in their marriages from being harmed.
And although,
my name is Kiyonke, not Scott.
You have to have a father that is not an abusive man himself, because you can't teach what you don't know and you can't lead where you don't go. So that the man who's being the example has to also understand how to be a nurturing father. And Pianchi said that about, you know, Pianchi's got a daughter, and you made her feel safe, and you say you researched the family. But you also got to look at the household that the young man is coming from. If he's coming from a fatherless home, home, that means he probably does not know how to relate to a woman in a way that is respectful, unless he was taught. And if his idea of fathering is, oh, okay, I'm going to be the disciplinarian, I'm going to beat the child, that's not helpful. Because the only thing you think your manhood is going to be in that household with that child is you're going to be the one that beats the child when they misbehave. That's not what we want to teach. We got to teach a higher level of parenting so that men know how to discipline without violence.
You got to look at the household the girl is coming from also. But she may be coming from some ratchet auntie on both sides. All you have to cover the bases all the way around.
Hey, ratchet, if you can.
But
it's hard. It's hard these days.
We need to be empowering our girls so that they can stand up for themselves as well, so that they don't need a man to come in and threaten their partner, that they can stand up for themselves.
And another role
that's not coming in, that should be established in the beginning. There should be a certain set of things that's established in the beginning. You have to make sure, because what will happen, your daughter will come back home with trash bags full of clothes and dragging babies.
Mm.
And then it's going to be on you again.
Mm. I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying in terms of the man coming into a family knowing that his wife got some backup, you know, her father, her brother.
That is important.
But he's got to be with her for love and not for herself as well. Yes. I mean, it's got to be mutual respect coming into the relationship. It can't be one based on fear that you hit or you're going to get beat up. It's got to be where you don't have in your heart the desire to hit, the desire to abuse. You have to have yourself in order so that you're in the relationship for the right reasons and you're not behaving just because you're afraid you're going to get beat. It can't be based on fear. It must be based on love and mutual respect. If it's not based on that, you're really not ready to be in a husband-wife situation.
Those are very important points.
Yeah,
One of the things that came up during the month of nonviolence was that we have to find a way to give people self-confidence and self-love. There is a real a feeling of insecurity, inadequacy that this society puts on top of black people. Let me give you a quick example. There was a case, it's on YouTube, called Polk Valley, P-O-L-K, Florida, where a white boy just committed some murders against some people down there. This white boy had been convicted 200 times and he was out on the street. Now, can you imagine a young black man being convicted of 10 felonies being on the street?
No,
it
that's never going to happen, is it? He's
and
not going to
so
have
kind,
his liberty
yeah,
ever again, is
it?
The kind of denigration, the kind of oppression that goes on is a big part of this violence problem. We have got to find a way to lift people up, for their self-concepts to be strengthened, and it has to start in the family, the school, and in the faith institutions. We heard during the month of nonviolence that there are ministers who know that women are being beaten that are in the church, but they don't say anything because
they don't want to lose the
congregation.
And not only do they not say anything, let me just come in here, not only do they not say anything, they will actually...
Yes, so that's a culture we have to get rid of, too.
Did you fix him a nice meal when he came in from work? You know, basically say things that put the onus on the woman, that somehow the woman has to change her behavior in order for the man to stop being violent.
This is what I'm saying. So if he in his own heart and mind is not able to be a kind, loving person without violence, he is not ready to be in a relationship.
Mm.
And that's also part of our parenting class. We're going to really examine being able to see when someone is fit for a relationship. Sometimes they're not. If you are someone who believes you have a right to hit someone if they displease you, you are not ready to be in a relationship. And no one should trust you with their life or the life of their children if you believe that. And if you
remember the house, thing is that the people
the hitting,
who need this help the most
the hitting,
are often
the
people
not only,
who are least able to recognize that they need this help. So how can we get through? You know, it's fine saying that we're going to do this parenting class. I mean, it's better than fine. I think it's excellent. But how do we reach the people who don't think they need it? Because those are often the people who need it the most.
Well, we only have certain institutions, and we have the family, we have the church, we have the schools, we have the workplace. And then to some extent we have organizations. We have got to identify which institutions. Now, in the case of Naima, your organization is going to do it, which is great. But we've got to make sure that these institutions have good principles that they're teaching if they're going to go out and do this. I think that the faith institutions really need to be challenged to take this issue on because I don't think that the schools are the place for it to happen. I think it needs to happen where people can sit down and deal with mental health. And it's not just violence against the domestic situation. We know that the gangs and the guns and the violence happening in the gun and the gangs, man on man, male on male, boy on boy, the bullying, this is as big a problem. The kids are afraid to go to school these days without a gun in their backpack because they're afraid
of
being bullied at school. Yes.
That is terrifying.
Violence at schools, mass shootings. And this is not, the mass shootings are happening more in the white community than the black community.
Mm.
So the anger that the young people are feeling towards the system is just out of control. There again, we must do the history research and show white people that their ancestors were indentured white slaves. Our ancestors were in bondage black slaves. Both of those cultures were victimized. And everyone's got to take a look at that and decide to go back and say, how do we change the outcome?
Yeah, and how can we heal? How can we heal from these traumas? Because this is what it is. It's trauma.
Absolutely, it's trauma. It's trauma. And nobody wants to face that. Everyone wants to think that it can all be handled, but it is not. So this whole issue of legislation is needed, leadership is needed, government programs are needed. We have to hold elected officials accountable and demand that they put programs into place to address some of these issues.
I don't really think anybody's answered my question, and I would really appreciate it if someone would answer my question.
Okay,
so
I'll repeat
the question.
What was the question?
The question that I asked is this, right? How do you approach people who don't think they need it? Because I think the people who need it the most are often people who are not willing to accept this help, this support. The people who need it the most are the ones who don't think they need it at all. So how do you address people saying to you, oh, we have to beat our children, which is, I've been told on any number of occasions, or something similar?
Well, Jonna, I'll answer that question.
Great.
Because there are going to be two groups of people that emerge as time goes on. There will be those who have been raised in a way that makes them better human beings, and there will be those who were raised in a way that makes them scarred and wounded human beings, and you will see a difference very clearly. So for those who are holding on to the idea of I must beat my child, they will see the results of that belief. We're seeing the results now, but now we're creating a contrast so that those who have been raised with love and not pain and fear and trauma will be able to lead by example. And they will be able to marry each other and create the kind of society that is peaceful. The ones that are still insisting on being cruel and insensitive and intimidating and disrespecting and beating their children, they will have the society that they created, the ones where young people take guns and kill each other and the adults because they're so full of anger. So if they still need to experience that before they understand that what they're doing produced that, then that will be the next generation, and they will experience the consequence of that choice. Those who make the choice to parent with peace will experience the love, the joy, and the peace of their choice, and there will be a clear distinction, and we will see it.
Okay.
Now, I'd like to respond to the question also.
I'm not disagreeing with anything you're saying, Naima. I'm just putting the opposite argument because, you know, it is out there. There's lots of people out there saying, if we don't beat our children, then they'll grow up to be bad people. Right? It's very sad, but it's true. That's what some people think. So, you know, I think we don't need to just speak to the converted, and I'm not saying that that's what you're doing. But I'm just saying we need to speak to the people who actually need our help, some of whom are in desperate situations.
One of the suggestions that I would make is that we need to push for policies. When people are in prison, they're in a place where they have to do what they're told. So maybe mm-hmm. we should be demanding parenting classes for people who are in prisons, that the people who are there should be, that the prison should at least have some types of workshops or, mm-hmm. or some way to try to reach that person who doesn't realize that they inherited this violence from their grandfather
exactly.
or their grandmother. So that needs to be a place.
That's one of our first targeted groups. I first started teaching a parenting class in prison, and you're absolutely right. And sometimes those can be your best students because realize what they experienced as children is what damaged them, so they're more receptive for a new thought that says this is not the way you raise a child because they know they were hurt. They know they were damaged. They know they were neglected. They know they were abused. And they're going to say, I don't want to do this to my child. So you're absolutely right. That's the best population
this
to target for this parenting class.
Yes?
Yes, yes. And this is something we have
prison,
to go to elected
know.
Officials.
Some of the
those
I used to teach in a women's prison called Holloway Prison. And in Holloway, I met some amazing people who were behind bars. And some of these people, if you had seen them when they were a child, you would have said, she's going to end up in prison. Because it was just obvious where they were headed. And, you know, if we can get in there and we can intervene and we can empower parents to be able to find a different parenting style, then, we can clear up a lot of society's ills.
Absolutely. That is where it starts. And it's going to take some concerted, consistent effort. And as you said, Jana, there are going to be people who say, oh, no, you have to hit your child. You have to discipline them because they don't know any other way. So we have to show them.
Exactly.
And then they'll be able to see the results. And then they can make a choice based on how the children are who've been parented with love and how the children are that have been parented with fear. And they will see the difference. And there will be some who say, oh, you're right. And there will be some who say, well, no, but see, that's just they just had a different kind of personality. But, yeah, I mean, you got these boys, you gotta hit them. You got to do it because they don't know. They don't know how.
Don't know any better. That's right.
Another angle that I think we need to approach is we need to use music and entertainment. A lot of the violence is coming through rap music. A lot of the language, the F word is used every other sentence, the N word. We've got to find some ways to get our entertainers and our rappers and our movie producers, they need to stop because the violence that you see in the films is unbelievable. I've been watching Ozark recently on Netflix, so I don't know if you guys have watched that. Violence. They are killing half the characters half the time. So if the kids are sitting there watching number one films that are promoted as being so popular and the people win Academy Awards and they win Oscars, we are then reinforcing violence and hate and anger in our media. So we need to go to the black community, to the leaders, to Jay-Z, to all these different artists, and they need to change the lyrics in Black Women for Positive
Change.
We've
got a couple of seconds left. You want to give a quick contact information for the annual month of nonviolence, the blogging carnival, where's the contact information for people to participate?
I think I've dropped
some links to the blogging carnival in the show notes. If I haven't, then I will. Stephanie?
The month of nonviolence.org, www.monthofnonviolence.org, or they can come to our membership website and join www.blackwomenforpositivechange.org. Either one of those sites will put them in touch with us, and we'll be preparing for 2023. I think we're going to make that the month of opportunities. I know you're getting ready to end, so we'll talk about that on another show.
Absolutely. I'm going to have you back on again. It's been delightful. I feel like between the three of us and also this gentleman who joined earlier, we basically got the world sorted out now, haven't we?
That's right. You got to put it in motion.
Yeah,
we already
got
it.
We just have to put it all into now. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye.
See you next time. Take care. Bye now.
Bye.
Thank you all. See you later.
We've come to the end of our show today.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
But you can hear
every
show
really
in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com.
/the-female-solution. Take care now.
You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/the-female-solution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows. Listen to our radio shows. Order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Sheshe, India, Zanyaba, Japan, Arigato, Korea, Kamsahamnida, Russia, Spasiba, Germany, Danke, Poland, Dziękuję, France, Merci, Spain, Gracias, Italy, Grazie, Egypt, Shukran, Ghana, Medasi, Nigeria, Eshe, South Africa, Ngiyabonga, Senegal, Geret, Kenya, Asante, Israel, Toda, Pakistan, Shukriya, Afghanistan, Tashakor, Saudi Arabia, Shukran, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you, and may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.